Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ants. They're organised, industrious and hungry. But in the undergrowth, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Empires of the Undergrowth is a fast-paced ant colony management game developed by Slug Disco Studios. Underground, you build your nest, construct tunnels and store food. On the surface, your ants claim territory, gather resources and clash with other colonies. Head to thenakedscientist.com/empiresgame for more.
Hi everyone, it's Chris Barrow here, back with the Naked Gaming Podcast and another episode in our series Monkey Island Discs. What a great name. Yes, we're talking to someone about their favourite games, characters, consoles, and also the game that they'd snap in half and very happily never play again. We did have a short break because we moved house, still no carpet in the living room, but it's all rock and roll in the world of podcasts. Now, our guest this time is Kerry Allen, who's the BBC's China media analyst, so she keeps across the changing landscape of China. But it also turns out that she absolutely loves gaming, saying she spends just as much time chasing the intricacies of Beijing's political system as cruising on the beaches of Miami in GTA Vice City. And as usual, we started at the beginning.
So I was gaming very, very early in life. My first console was a Commodore 64, and I had a shoebox full of floppy disks that me and my dad used to play, or my friends used to play. They'd come over to my house, and we played games like Lemmings, that's still quite popular nowadays. The original Prince of Persia game, Bubble Bobble as well, was a game that I really loved playing for ages. Like, there were a lot of arcade games that you couldn't save games on this console, really. So, you know, you'd really have to kind of have a spurt, kind of put your time in. And if you lost, you lost. And that was it. Go and have dinner and come back and play another day.
With games that didn't save, it really put a lot of jeopardy into your kind of gaming time. It made you play for a lot longer. Because, like, they've just re-released Castlevania on the... that used to be a Game Boy Advance game. And I didn't realise at the time that if you took the battery out, you lost your save.
Oh my
or
gosh.
If the batteries ran out. So you had the life of two AA batteries to try and complete the game. And if you didn't, you had to start again. But did that make gaming better or more fun for you? Because I suppose you had to sort of have your gaming session and that was it then.
Yeah, I mean, I think I still find the appeal of arcade gaming nowadays great. And actually, when I lived in China, there were still these old school arcades that you could go to. And me and my friends, we would go there and we loved the idea that, you know, you'd stand in front of a game and be like, right, this is it, we'll see how much further we can get this time. Yeah, I think this is still something that's actually quite exciting. I really love arcade gaming, and I kind of wish here in the UK that we had more arcades.
Well, tell us a bit about where your interest in Chinese came from, because obviously that's a huge part of your working life. And I just wondered if there was any kind of crossover with gaming, because when we played games as kids, they weren't necessarily all in English, and especially things like Pokemon, you know, you could play in different languages.
Yeah, well, Pokemon was a big influence for me. So I did have a Game Boy originally, the original Game Boy, not Game Boy Color. And the chunky one, the really chunky one. And I had Pokemon Red, my brother had Pokemon Blue. And yeah, that was a big influence for me, because Asian culture didn't really feel that it was a big thing here. And things that were Japanese felt very strange and exotic. So yeah, I remember as a kid, I was very interested in anime and manga. I used to watch Pokemon on ITV, on SMTV Live as well. I remember, I mean, this is the days of dial-up internet. I used to, when I was a teenager, go on online and try and find out more about other things like Pokemon, so other Japanese cartoons. I mean, we had Dragon Ball Z here as well, so I used to watch a bit of that. And I did think originally that I was going to study Japanese, but Chinese, I think I somewhere around university time, I decided I'd do this instead, because I think I'd heard that they were both very similar languages. They had the same roots, and China had this huge history and culture that I didn't know much about at all. And I thought, actually, I'll study this. So yeah, I think gaming did play a large part and have a big influence on my decision to learn Chinese.
It's such an interesting route in, and obviously so many people speak Chinese. I mean, I think people forget just how many and how useful a language it actually is as well. Does that mean that now you could play a video game in Chinese and be totally kind of immersed in it? Or do you still find yourself, even now, even with so much experience, kind of translating it and converting it to English and then taking it in?
Well, it's quite common in China anyway that when you watch TV, you'll see subtitles underneath. Chinese is a tonal language, so for people who speak dialects, it helps them. Like, it's quite common to see subtitles on any TV show, and it's the same with games. And in fact, actually, before I joined the BBC and I was just looking for a job when I returned to the UK, I was very much looking at localization jobs, because companies like Rockstar offer opportunities for translators to be able to work on games, and I thought that was super exciting, the idea that I could game and use my language skills at the same time.
It's like the dream job.
So a lot of games nowadays, you will often have subtitles underneath, and because my job involves reading Chinese newspapers all the time, watching Chinese TV, I would find playing a Chinese game very much the same as playing an English game.
What are some of the favourite games that you've played in the course of your gaming life?
My favourite game of all time is GTA Vice City. I was very much into Miami Vice, massively into Miami Vice. So the idea of a GTA game that used Philip Michael Thomas as one of the voice actors, and very much kind of immersed you in 80s culture, beautiful Miami scenery, 80s music. I just find the game it's the ultimate escapism, particularly, and I always return to it in winter when it's really cold, because it's literally it's a game you can play that you're in this wonderful sunny setting. It's got a great story, and it's just, for me, it's the ultimate game. It's not, I would say, the more challenging of the GTA games. Yeah. I mean, I think GTA 3 still really holds up, and it really gets really difficult and progressively difficult, because the more missions you do, there's kind of gangs that come to certain areas. I actually think it's probably one of the more challenging games compared to, say, the more modern ones like GTA 5. I love GTA San Andreas as well, because it's got such a huge map and so many little side missions. So yeah, GTA for me has always had a big presence, and I do obviously love GTA 5, and I'm one of these people that hopes we're going to get a GTA 6 soon, but let's see.
Stop kidding around, Snake!
Is there one game that you would never want to play again, or you would happily snap the disc in half, or you know, could sign to, I don't know, the fire, because it's over your lifetime, it's not been a great experience?
I think there have been a few. I mean, one game that I played recently that I was actually so disappointed in was Dreamfall The Longest Journey, which was the sequel to The Longest Journey, which was originally, this was a game that was excellent. It was, I think it was released in the 90s, and it was a click and point game where you've got a female protagonist in this kind of cyberspace world, and she can kind of, she realizes that she can shift into this kind of fantasy world. So it's kind of got kind of Lord of the Rings influence, but also kind of Tomb Raider influence as well. And there was a follow-up to this game, and it was more a first-person game. So it was no longer click and point, like you were the character instead, and you played as a different character, the original protagonist. She was quite sassy. She had a really good sense of humour. And the game that followed it was a completely different character. I found it really didn't stay true to the story, and I don't want to give away spoilers, but something bad happened to the original character, and for me it was such a betrayal of the original game. I was just so disappointed at the end of it. And I also found as well that it just ended, it was too easy for me. Like, compared to the original game where you had to do a lot of thinking and it was a very long, drawn out game, this game for me was just, I was so disappointed.
So you're happy to never play it again? Not recommended.
Yeah, I'm definitely not. But at the same time, I'm conscious that I have still got the third game in the series, Dreamfall Chapters, to play. And I've been putting off playing it because I'm thinking, is it going to continue that second terrible story or not?
A dark time for the series. And you mentioned that the character from the first game was quite sassy. I wanted to ask you if there's any characters in the world of gaming that you particularly are a fan of, or that if you could be them or perhaps have some of their characteristics yourself, that you would take on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always enjoyed games with strong female protagonists. The idea that you can, yeah, literally have this, like, just be this cool, sassy woman. I mean, April Ryan in the original The Longest Journey game, she was fantastic. Another click and point game I love is Siberia, and there's a character in that called Kate Walker that you play as. And she goes to look into the will of an old toy factory, and it's all a very kind of steampunk world. And she gets immersed in this kind of strange kind of story where a lot of the characters are these robots that are made out of kind of very kind of steampunk style robots. And she goes off on this strange journey to, literally Siberia, hence the name of the game. And she's great. I mean, she's very relatable. She's got a lot of personal issues happening while she's very career driven. And I think she's fantastic. And then obviously, yeah, Lara Croft is brilliant. I think a lot of people who have been gaming for the last two or three decades have just, you know, they've definitely seen something in Lara Croft that they see in themselves, or they kind of want to be her. I mean, I actually think that, yeah, like Pokemon, she was a big influence for me in kind of going off to China and learning Chinese, because she's this big adventurer and she goes to these kind of strange exotic locations and looks at strange languages in tombs. And I remember thinking that, gosh, that's going to be like me when I go to China. I'm going to be like Lara Croft, go to very strange locations, and it's all going to be exotic and very strange and different to anything I've ever done before.
Gaming in China recently has been in the news because obviously there's been a gaming ban. Well, I'd call it a ban, but it's sort of like a huge restriction on gaming time for under 18s. So at the moment, kids can only play on a Friday and weekends and special bank holiday or special holidays as well, which is a bit odd because you think, well, if that means, you know, like a national holiday, you probably are supposed to be going outside rather than gaming on your special holiday.
Yeah.
But what's the situation like with gaming in China? Because you're obviously hooked into that world and it seems like quite restrictive now, and I wonder if there's kind of restrictions on the types of games that people can even play, and obviously the online world as well. It's such a huge part of gaming nowadays, it must be very controlled.
Yeah, so I when I lived in China, I remember it was very, very common to see on practically every street corner a wangba, which is literally an internet cafe, and you can walk in there and you show your passport to show that you're over 18, and these places were absolutely full of people gaming, and they would game for hours on end. So gaming was very, very popular amongst adults. But also, I mean, China's becoming this huge tech industry. It became increasingly common to me in the kind of, yeah, around the 2010s, that you would see very, very young children with iPads or tablets, and they were playing games on those. Nowadays, you've got a lot of people with mobile games. I mean, when I first moved to China, smartphones weren't really a thing. I had this tiny little phone where, you know, you could play Snake on it, literally, like, that was it. Nowadays, you've got a lot of people developing mobile games in a city called Shenzhen in the south of the country. That's known as a big kind of tech hub, and a lot of people playing these games as well. And there are games that are particularly popular things like these kind of story driven games. You play as a character and you kind of choose your own adventure by falling in love with someone. These games are quite popular, and also for over 18s, the games that people still play in internet cafes now, or they play from their homes. The kind of multiplayer online games, they prove particularly popular. But China is quite restrictive, so Western games aren't particularly banned. There's a huge backlog that prevents them from getting allowed in the country, and you don't have Steam like you do here in the UK or like in most places of the world. So a lot of games have to be authorised by companies like Tencent, which is a domestic provider of games. And so for that reason, because China's super strict on what it allows, you don't have, it allows games that it sees that aren't too violent or too pornographic. So some of the games that I like GTA, they would probably never find a presence in China. So these are not games that people would play in internet cafes. They'd find that they play games that the government first has kind of scoured through and approved.
And I'm imagining that really limits the amount of independent games that you might come across, because whereas one individual, and you know, we've spoken to some of them on the podcast, can make a game almost on their own and self-publish and just go for it, and there is a platform, I'm guessing that just simply doesn't happen.
No, not at all. No, you have to get games authorised first by the Ministry of Information and Internet Technology, and that can be a long, laborious process. And a lot of games nowadays, they're waiting in years-long queues. So there are games that have been made, and yeah, they can be made very, very quickly now in China. But they might take years before they actually see an audience, because they have to get approval onto platforms, they have to get promotion, and a lot of that involves working with the state.
I don't want to drag you into the console war, but I do want to ask you if you have a favourite, and particularly growing up, because, you know, there was a PlayStation-Xbox rivalry that was quite big over the course of my childhood, but there was also, computer gaming became more and more popular, and, you know, PC gaming I'm talking about, really, and there's almost this now three-way kind of thing going on. Obviously, there's Nintendo weighing in with the Switch and being so popular. Where do you fall on the on the kind of console-PC war?
So if it was between Xbox and PlayStation, I have always been a PlayStation girl. I had a PS2 back in the day and I'd play wrestling games on it and it was fantastic. I had Crash Bandicoot on it. At my parents' house, we have a PS5 now. So we've been starting to get some of the games on that. So that's great. I've never had an Xbox. For me, just on the basis of like when I was living in China and I was moving around quite a bit, and just on the basis that I needed games to hand that, you know, wouldn't necessarily be cut off because of internet restrictions, or, you know, I could always rely on them being there. I've always been very loyal to the PC. So I'm actually recording this off of a gaming PC. And a lot of the games that I play nowadays, so I have GTA 5, I got the PC version. Two Point Hospital, for example, which is kind of like a remake of Theme Hospital back in the day, which was a fantastic game. I play a lot of my gaming gets done on a PC, and I am very much a heavy promoter of PC gaming, because I think it's fantastic.
It is good, but the what I found with PCs over time, and you can tell me how to combat this, is you always seem to get the perfect PC setup, and then in a year they'll release another game that needs a bit more power, so then you have to like become an expert at dealing with RAM and stuff. I don't really know what it is. I'm a bit scared of the tech, so I'm guessing that means that you're quite capable at tackling that.
You would think, yeah. No, I think this is partly why I play a lot of retro games, because they don't take up a lot of space on the PC. And I think, yeah, a lot of games, they still hold up today. And I think you can still discover a lot of really, really good games that have been made in the last 20 years that you can still kind of, you know, enjoy nowadays that you might have missed at the time. So one of the games that I've been playing recently, it's just quite amusing, like I discovered Shenmue. I never discovered it at the time. But just because there are talks about Chinese characters in the game, while I was looking for Chinese material related to my work, like some kind of little short videos related to the game came up, and I discovered it that way, and I ended up playing Shenmue. I didn't even know about this game at the time. I don't know where I was, but I do think a lot of games that were made around the kind of late 90s, early noughties, I'm still discovering, and I think, you know, I think there's still games that, yeah, I could play and enjoy as much today as some of the new ones that are coming out.
thanks to Kerry Allen for being on the podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, then make sure you subscribe so you can get the whole series. We're back into the swing of things now, so we'll be updating as often as we can. And if you're a personal friend of Kerry's and you're listening, then make sure you leave a review saying that this was the best episode of the series so far. Of course. Well, I'll catch you next time here on the Naked Gaming Podcast, where we're reviewing Deathloop and FIFA 22. Time for a mic drop. And now a mic pickup.
Ants. They're organised, industrious and hungry. But in the undergrowth, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Empires of the Undergrowth is a fast-paced ant colony management game developed by Slug Disco Studios. Underground, you build your nest, construct tunnels and store food. On the surface, your ants claim territory, gather resources and clash with other colonies. Head to thenakedscientist.com/empiresgame for more.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.